The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Still waiting for the truth to be told.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections, and I'm your host right now, temporarily till Donna gets here, Joseph Jackson. And this month we start our political series leading up to the national election, which is going to be November 8th this year. And our candidate today is Jacob Turk, who is running for the 5th Congressional District. And
good afternoon.
Here at KKFI, we do not just bring in one party. We have reached out to Congressman Cleaver, and we received an email that said he was unavailable. So we did extend an invitation to both candidates. So welcome, Mr.
I appreciate
Turk,
it very much. Coming. Thank you. Thank you for letting me come on.
Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
How much of a biography do you want?
Well, I know you're a veteran of the Marine Corps.
I am.
A former small business owner.
Yep. I had my own small database programming company for 12 years. I'm a mechanical engineer by degree. I actually started in physics before I went and volunteered for the Marines. My dad's he's passed away now, about 4 years. God rest his soul. I miss him. Korean War veteran in the first wave of the Incheon landing, so I always knew that I wanted to serve like my dad did, so I did. And I used the GI Bill to get through college and actually work cleaning parking lots to pay the rest of the bills, because eventually I was already married, and then I had a son halfway through. So I have 3 grandkids. What else can I tell you?
What organizations or things do you volunteer with in the community?
I've done quite a bit of volunteering through my church, Lee Summit Community Church, and various ministries that they have there. I have been in the, what was it called?
Junior Achievement?
Wasn't Junior Achievement. It was when my kids were younger, I wanted to teach them how to volunteer. And it was an organization of young professionals. So we would go to different events and serve the community and raise money for different causes. Volunteerism, I thought, was very important for my kids and all young people to learn, because you can always give back. One of the reasons I joined the Marine Corps was to give back. And so there's various charities throughout the area that I'll go and help at an event and just lend a hand, because that's what hopefully I can encourage, if nothing else, encourage people listening today, that if you just go help a little, it helps a lot for everybody. And if everybody does that, then we start taking care of the needs of our community.
Okay. So you've run previously before, and why are you running this time again? What's different this time when you've run the last, I think it's 2 times before? What have you done differently this time?
Well, you're very kind. This is actually the 6th time that I've run for this office. This has always been a burden that was laid on my heart by the Lord to do this, from the aspect of calling me out of just ordinary life. I've never been elected to anything. When my feet were put on this path, I had no political experience. I didn't have public speaking experience, certainly no radio interview experience, and I actually have a speech impediment. So it's been interesting to walk through this. But I've realized, as I've run for office, there are a lot of needs in the community. And people need a champion. They need an advocate. There are a lot of federal programs that, unfortunately, are not being as efficient as they need to be. And what's different is the political climate. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with the political class and those who have been part of it for a long time. I've never been elected to anything. I have a servant's heart. I've been told hundreds of stories over the years, veterans not getting their disability payments, people not getting their Social Security disability. Just recently, the 31st in Cleveland problem with the leaking gas tank, that by going to a community meeting, found out that that's actually been going on for 20 years. People smell gasoline, and that's just, to me, it's immoral and it's unacceptable. And as a congressman, you have the ability to walk into the offices of the EPA. You have the ability to call up DNR, Department of Natural Resources in Missouri. You have the ability to exert pressure to get that done. To me, it shouldn't take 20 years. It should take 20 days because those are toxic fumes. So there are ways that a congressman can help, and that's what I want to do.
Yes, I wasn't there at the meeting you were at, and I can say there's 66 of those sites across the city. And while that site, that is the longest active site right there at 31st Street and Cleveland, where you've had a site right down from our studios here that was 1 year. They had leaking gas. 6 weeks later, the tanks were off the ground. They refilled those tanks up and found leaks in the other tanks, and then those tanks were out. The entire station was closed for a year, so you're exactly right on that.
So why is that okay in one part of the city and not okay in another part of the city? You know, why is it taken care of quickly? I think that people need an advocate, that people have felt like they haven't had a voice for so long, and that's the frustration that people have with their government. And so people have been open across the district to making a change. They figure that Congressman Cleaver's had 12 years, and we would like to see more change than what we're seeing today.
So when it comes to your district, what are the boundaries of your district? How large is your district?
It's really been expanded. Right now there are Kansas City south of the river, and then we have the southern tip of Clay County, which is North Kansas City, Clay Como, Gladstone, Avondale. We also have parts of Lee Summit, parts of Blue Springs. We have Oak Grove, Green Valley, south of I-70. So Jackson County really got chopped up in the deal between the two parties in 2011. It was a big incumbent protection plan. And that has also rankled a lot of people as they started realizing what the incumbents did to be able to choose their voters rather than voters choosing their representatives. It really takes the right of voting away from people when that happens. And I was just talking to a gentleman yesterday at this seminar, and he was talking about how the parties have done this across the country, that they've divvied up the House of Representatives, and in his opinion, and it was a new thought for me, how that has made us more polarized, because they've made the districts either like this one 65% Democrat or another one 65% Republican. So it's not, people don't have to moderate their opinions. They're able to stay in office, even though they may be way away from the center and way away from being able to work with the other side. And so that's happened across the country. So, and in addition, I forgot there's three more counties. I didn't forget, but I went off on that that idea, is Lafayette, Ray, and Saline. They're rural counties. They're really different than the urban-suburban district that it was before. And again, it was because basically the incumbents were vote shopping. They were looking for different communities that would support them, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. In this case, it was to make it more Democrat. And so they were pulled in, even though their issues, they're about 10% of the population of the district, and their issues are quite different than the rest of the district, and that's a shame.
That's leading to the next question, because suburban districts have a different demographic, but they also have different needs than the rural districts, and that's been some of the problem in the Missouri legislature, is the urban versus rural. How do we begin to come together to look at, so it's not us against them or them against us, but us beginning to work together? So do you see that in your district, where the, what are the needs of those who live down in Saline County, which is, I know, down by Malta Bend, Concordia, Alma, Blackburn. I know the area well.
You do?
My parents were born and raised there, so every year for 15 years. My dad was from Mount Leonard, and my mom was from Blackburn. So for every year for 15 years, we would go down and see. And it's truly a total, it's more of a farm type area there.
It is. Total rural.
Total rural. So it's a lot different.
You asked about what needs to be done, and I think the best way to answer that is, if you have sincere partners as elected officials, then you can work towards a solution of any issue. And so we have to have sincere elected officials that really want to solve the problems and realize that it's not just a community here, it's not a community there. It's an entire community that we have that needs to work together to solve our problems. The issues may be different depending on the community. In the rural counties, they worry a lot about infrastructure. There's been some discussion that the needs of the urban suburban areas have gotten more of the infrastructure than the rural areas. And those are topics for discussion and to look at. But to realize that we are all part of the same community, and then we can work out the differences on the issues and help each other through those issues. One of the community activists that I've met along the way made a statement that has stuck with me to this day, and he made it probably 8 years ago. And he said, Turk, I don't support you because I'm Republican. I don't support you because I agree with all your ideas. I support you because I know you're a sincere man who can bring the community together to help us solve our problems here in the city. And that's a big responsibility, and it's one I take very seriously.
Hi, Jacob Turk. Welcome to Urban Connections. Donna Wolf.
Hi, Donna.
Hi.
Easy for me to remember. You know why?
Why?
It's my wife's name.
Oh, okay. Donna's are cool. We know this. Thank you for being our guest here today. I did want to just get right to the issues that are being discussed in our nation these days leading up to our election in November. One of the issues listed on your website is titled Common Sense Healthcare Reform. It says you will work to repeal and replace Obamacare with a common sense solution that will provide coverage for those unable to do so on their own and with no rate ups or turn downs for pre-existing conditions. What specifically are these common sense solutions that you will enact to replace what's known as Obamacare, but is really the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. Great question. One of the things that I was worried about when the ACA was being discussed and argued over, and there was a lot of yelling, was that it wouldn't solve the problems that the American people wanted solved. They want people to be able to have health care coverage. Everybody. They want a system where there are no rate-ups for pre-existing conditions or turndowns for those. And I didn't think the ACA would solve those problems. And it hasn't. There are people that have health care coverage that didn't have health care coverage before, and that's a good part. But it hasn't made things affordable. There's been steady rate increases. And then also, coverages have been contracted. A good example is that people's premiums in the time since it was enacted have told me about their premiums have doubled and their deductible has doubled. And when you have high deductible policies, you're basically asking people to pay now out of pocket instead of having insurance. So what I proposed before was to leave current health insurance practices in place, but to then start to subsidize people based on socioeconomic factors, and where people needed help paying premiums, you allow them to go on to the very same marketplace that everybody else goes on to. And then you start on a sliding scale, providing part of that premium down to a scale where we're providing the entire premium. And then also as part of that, keep the parts of the law that were no rate ups. And unfortunately, we have had those. That was supposed to solve that. It did not. I go around the community, and I talk to people all over this district. And they've had write-ups because of pre-existing conditions. They've had turndowns because of pre-existing conditions. Or they can get health insurance because they're guaranteed to, but the premiums are going to be astronomical. That was the same issue we had before. So I want to make sure that we have a solution in place. So like with the sliding scale, hold the insurance companies to those no write-ups, no turndowns, and then have that in place before we do a repeal. It's very important to me that our political class doesn't play a game with people's health care. So they talk about repealing. I wouldn't vote for a repeal until there was legislation in front of me that solved the issues that would be part of that same bill. So in the same bill, repeal and replace it at the same time so there's not a disruption in people's health care insurance.
And how would you get insurance companies to comply with that no rate ups, no turndowns?
Have them have rating pools. One of the solutions is, I used to work at the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and that's the quasi-governmental body through which the insurance commissioners regulate the insurance industry. And so that gave me a really good insight into how insurance companies work. And one of the mechanisms they use is a rating pool. And one of the suggestions I made was have larger geographic rating pools, that if an insurance company wants to write insurance in an area, they have to be willing to accept everybody in that area, and they can't rate up their insurance policy.
So what would be the repercussions? How would you hold them accountable to that? Would
well, they couldn't. They well, there would be regulation, but they couldn't write in that market unless they complied. And so you make those rating pools, let's say the metropolitan area of Kansas City, that if you wanted to be as a health insurance company, you wanted to write in Kansas City, Missouri, then you have to be willing to accept everybody in Kansas City, Missouri. You can't pick and choose who you have. And that was just one possible solution. I'm open to solutions. I'm open to discussions. But that was just one possible way of solving this issue of making sure that people do have health insurance that doesn't put them into bankruptcy.
Do you have a sense of how much lobbying power the insurance industry has and how influential that is in legislature on health care?
No. They wrote the ACA. And that's one of the reasons why I think there's problems with the ACA. Their lobbyists were able to get that in there. And now the insurance companies, and this is, I'm not a party guy. I'm a people guy. And when I hear about that, now the health insurance companies are putting in for hundreds of millions of dollars in payments. With the way that the rates have gone, the premiums have skyrocketed. The deductibles have skyrocketed. I'm well aware of how powerful their lobby is. What I can do is I can just fight against that. A lot of people don't realize this, and they tell me, well, you should tell more people. I don't accept any special interest money at all. One of the things I realized in running for this office, if I'm going to represent you, if I'm going to represent people, then I can't have a divided interest. And so from the very beginning, I've made the pledge, I don't take any special interest money, and I never have, and I never will, because I need to be able to focus on you and your needs and your concerns and not have divided interest.
Yeah.
Something on your website, you talk about small business, meaning about small businesses and job creation, and a lot of people don't know that small businesses create over 50% of the jobs in the United States. What would you look at doing to spur that industry so they can hire more people for small businesses, corporations around the United States?
The Kauffman Center actually came out with a recent study that showed almost all new jobs being created in this economy are created by businesses that are less than 10 years old. So it's almost a two-part answer. We have to encourage entrepreneurship. African-American women start companies at a higher rate than almost any other demographic. We have to continue to encourage that while encouraging other companies to start in all communities. With our microloan programs, there are different SBA programs that can be used, loans, Small Business Administration. To get started, part of the problem is people don't watch, they don't watch the store, and so the money gets frittered away. It just kind of disappears into the air. One of the things I can do as a congressman with those programs as well as other programs is to keep an eye on the money, make sure it gets to the people that the program was intended for. So I would like to see more entrepreneur programs, both training, reach out in the public schools with some of the people that I know personally that own businesses, and encourage students that you can do this too. So we need more new business startups. One of the problems that we've had in the last couple of years is since 1975, six, for the first time, we had more small businesses destroyed than created. If we're going to get the economy moving, we have to have policies that encourage people to go in business. The other part of the answer is, in talking to current business owners, they've said time and again, I don't know why anybody would start a business in this environment. So the regulatory agencies at both the state and federal level are not partners with us. They punish us, and they go beyond their duty. There are OSHA has become a cost profit center. So instead of them just working with businesses to make sure they have a safe workplace, they go out and they find people as the first remedy.
You talk about education. We have, being a former school board member, we have divested the money that we've gotten to goes to pre-care and early childhood programs, which has been shown nationally that for every dollar that you invest in early childhood head start and education programs, you get an $8 return. You have students who are over 60% going to graduate on time. They're more likely to go to college. They're more likely not to be involved with the legal system or the judicial system. And they're more likely to go on and get long-term careers without being a drain towards society. So how can we turn around and do those small business creation without revamping money that we have that goes toward education? Because I know as our school board funds dwindled over the 4 years I was on the board, they went from, I think it was about $25 million down to, I think it was about $18 million. And that funding is definitely needed. Your Title I, all your other funds that help those that are low to moderate income. So how would you look at improving that if we're going to improve the small business creation side of it?
Well, the programs I'm talking about are already in place and already funded, so they wouldn't affect that. But I hear you loud and clear about early childhood education. There are some very successful programs around the country. Parents as Teachers is one of them. My wife was in an organization several years ago, and she brought home a stunning statistic, which was that the children that don't do as well in school, as opposed to those that do, the amount of reading that was done to them was, a hundredfold different. The children that came in at reading level in kindergarten had about 2,000 hours of reading that, you know, parents, grandparents, other people read to them. The ones that didn't had 20 hours. So they were behind when they got to kindergarten. And so that's been an issue that's been on my heart. Talked to a lot of people. You know, how do we get more reading into the ears of those children? And there are different programs to do that. But definitely it's something that I will be fighting for, because you're right. It makes a huge difference in how our society operates when we have children that start out so far behind. So how do we catch them up? There are some programs over in Kansas where there's actually a partnership with some churches over there where they go in and they start engaging with these families to help the literacy within that family. And so we're going to need a concentrated effort like that in families where reading is not second nature for them, or there may be English as a second language, or any number of situations. We have to find ways to help them.
On your website, regarding small business help and support, it says that you will fight to reduce the burden of regulations that are squeezing the life out of independent businesses,
yeah,
and that you will intervene on behalf of mom-and-pop shops that are being unfairly harassed by the federal bureaucracies. Bureaucracies of EPA, OSHA, and the IRS. What are these regulations that are squeezing the life out of businesses. And truly you believe that EPA, OSHA, and the IRS are harassing citizens? And can you give examples of that?
Sure, absolutely. I can give you examples. One of the problems that with the federal regulatory agencies is the larger corporations. The corporations have entire staffs to go with compliance, and they get hit sometimes, but disproportionately small businesses where you may have a sole proprietor or partnership or somebody that has 20 employees or less, when a federal agency comes in and finds them, and I'll give you some examples, and finds them, it's very difficult for them and very costly for them to try to keep up with that.
So you think they should not be regulated?
Oh, no, not
what
at all.
About the public's health and safety?
No,
regulations, I would think,
not at all.
To do, protect
we need reasonable regulation that protects both the workers, the owners, and the public. We need all those things. That's not where I'm going at all. But let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them. There's a manufacturer down towards the south of Kansas City, and he told me how OSHA came in and gave him a $50,000 fine. And he's like, why do I have this? Because he runs a safe shop. He has a 100% safety record for the last 10 years, never has had any problem. Well, the OSHA inspector said, well, you know, up there, and they look up, and it's about 30 feet up in the air on his manufacturing floor. There's a part of the plate on an electrical outlet was cracked. And the OSHA inspector said, well, that's dangerous for a worker, could stick their finger in that. And the owner was, well, if I have a worker that goes and gets a 30-foot ladder and climbs up there and sticks his finger in it, then I've got bigger problems than that cracked plate. So that would be an example. He had to hire a lawyer. He had to negotiate with OSHA. He had to spend time away from his business. And they ultimately settled for a $5,000 fine.
So he wasn't given the opportunity to make the repair?
Correct.
Was he cited and did not get the opportunity to make the repair?
He did not have the opportunity to make the repair. That's one of the – there's actually a piece of legislation in Congress that is to require agencies to actually work with small businesses, specifically with small businesses, on issues like that, where there's not an immediate health hazard or there's not an immediate danger, to actually be a partner with the business to make it a safer environment rather than to punish these business owners in situations like that. Another one, paint shops, professional paint shops, use cans of paint to do painting. They have their bays where they do their painting. There's now a regulation that says you can only have one can of paint out at a time. So I don't know if you've ever been a professional paint shop, but they're usually doing multiple colors and they're doing masking and those types of things. And on the good side, there's regulations that require them to have ventilation and fans and all those things and filters to capture the paint products. So that's all on the good. Well, they took it a step farther and said you can only have one can, and all the rest of the cans have to be locked up. Well, talking to this owner, he said, I can't make money that way. That's my time to take it to the locker, unlock it, lock it up, and put it in. When I asked the inspector why I was required to do that, he said, well, somebody might wander in and pick up a can of paint and start spraying it. And it doesn't make sense.
Well, go ahead, Joe. And after your question, we're going to take a break.
Okay. We briefly talked about the tax code, the IRS. We have a candidate who declared a $915 million loss.
Hmm.
And if you look at candidate for president, if you look at the way it's set up, that means he wouldn't, to be able to write off a loss of that type, mm-hmm. would take almost 20 years.
Hmm.
Would you be in favor of reforming the Internal Revenue Service code to look at that? Because those types of losses, while they're not common,
mm-hmm.
could end up being a situation where the person is paying less taxes than they would have been able to had they not had that $915 million loss.
Our tax code has grown into this gargantuan octopus, and it's usually been done for special interests. Often those who have either powerful lobbies or wealthy people, things in the codes have been written for that. I would like to have a much cleaner tax code, one that has a few, maybe a few deductions for buying a house, those type of things, and then have a limited number of brackets, or there's flat tax, or there's people that think that the way to go is with a national sales tax. I'm open to different solutions. I don't think that what we have in the tax code now is fair, and those issues need to be addressed. Now, I speak straightforwardly. I think that's a really tough get in Washington, D.C., because of powerful lobbying interests to get that changed. So,
What is your position on releasing tax records? I know we had the Clintons have done it. Trump has not. Mm-hmm. In your race, have you released your tax records, or is that something you've chose not to do or not to do?
I haven't. You're the first person to ever ask me about that. At the congressional level, I guess it's never been an issue. Now, we are moderate income people, and I don't know how to answer that question. I mean, I would have to ask my wife, do you mind that? And because, like I said, we're moderate income people, and we usually have, this will say something to people that do tax preparation, but we usually just take the standard deduction, and so ours are straightforward, middle income people.
Do you think that Donald Trump should release his income tax returns, as has every presidential candidate since the 1970s, I believe? Do you think he should release his?
It would be fine with me. I concentrate on this particular race.
Mm-hmm. But you are a member of the Republican Party, correct?
I am a member of the Republican Party. I guess you'd have to say I'm from the independent wing of the Republican Party, because that redistricting plan I told you about certainly was not done to benefit me. It was done to benefit incumbents, didn't matter which party they were in, mm-hmm. which I just think is wrong. It should be about all of us rather than about them, and that's part of the problem we have. When it comes to releasing taxes, not releasing taxes, I think what has to be done is people need to make that decision for themselves, and then the public's going to decide whether they think that's fair or not. You know, we have Hillary Clinton's released hers. Donald Trump hasn't released his. The public is making a judgment on what they think about that. And so each candidate has to run their own campaign, and then they suffer the consequences or reap the benefits of their decisions.
Okay. We are going to take a break right now. You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections on 90.1 FM. This is our fall pledge drive. We have existed here, free speech, community radio, 100,000 watts strong for over 25 years because of your direct support. So continue to do that. The time is now to pick up your phone and give a pledge of your support for community radio. The number to call is 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. We have Amy Bell and Ricky in the pledge room. They're ready and willing and able, happy to take your call. It's time to show your support for community radio, where you can listen and interact with candidates directly. You can also donate. Joe is reminding me on the website safely at www.kkfi.org. That is a secure link. I also want to say, on a personal note, I lost someone who profoundly affected me. And I want to honor that individual, Stanley Durall Jr., also known as Buckwheat Zydeco, passed away in Lafayette, Louisiana, about 10 days ago. And a great ambassador of culture and love and peace and unity. And I'm honored that he once referred to me as his dear friend. So when we come back and on the breaks, I'll be playing Zydeco music for the healing of all the nations.
Hello, this is Barry Jackson asking you to support KKFI, your community radio station where you hear radio like you've never heard it before. If you listen to commercial radio now and then, you know what media consolidation is, cookie-cutter programming. And every 15 minutes of every hour, they're hounding you to buy stuff. KKFI is different, completely different. And you know why? Because it's independent, community-based public radio funded by the community, and our only responsibility is to you, the listener. And think of all the diversified programming you get, even with all the blues, jazz, rockabilly, and classic rock and roll. You get that old-school funk and jazz fusion that you just won't hear anywhere else. If you want entertainment and information that you cannot get anywhere else, if you share KKFI's mission, then call 888-931-0901 and make your pledge today. That's 888-931-0901. Or if you prefer, go online to kkfi.org and make your pledge. Call now at 888-931-0901.
Hello, this is Charles Ferruza asking you to support KKFI, your community radio station where you hear radio like you've never heard it before. Kansas City's a great town. But can you imagine how boring life in this city would be without the terrific music, the lively voices, the unique topics and discussions you get 24 hours a day at KKFI? We give you life as you've never heard it before. If you want entertainment and information that you can't get anywhere else, if you share KKFI's mission, then call 888-931-0901 and make your pledge today. That's 888-931-0901. Or, if you'd prefer, go online to kkfi.org and make your pledge. Call now at 888-931-0901.
Hello, this is Groovy Grant asking you to support KKFI, your community radio station where you hear radio like you never heard it before. KKFI is a shared resource where you'll hear many different opinions and perspectives. You may not agree with them all, but it's important that everyone has the opportunity to be heard at least some of the time. And the diversity of programs you hear on KKFI gives you the opportunity to consider all perspectives so that your own opinions will be more fully informed. If you want entertainment and information that you can't get anywhere else, if you share KKFI's mission, then call 888-931-0901 and make your pledge today. That's 888-931-0901. Or if you prefer, go online to kkfi.org and make your pledge. Call now at 888-931-0901.
That's all. What's that?
Sweet Doolittle Jr., Senior rather, here on 90.1 FM KKFI, your very own community radio station. You're tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI, and we are in our fall pledge drive. Once again, we turn to you for your support to keep us viable and vibrant and relevant on the airwaves here in Kansas City, Missouri, and in the surrounding areas. We have a 100,000-watt signal that reaches the 80-mile radius in and around the city of Kansas City, Missouri, a rare gem among broadcast signals, especially for community radio in our nation. So we have to protect that. Show your support for that right now by calling our pledge line at 888-931-0901 or pledging online at www.kkfi.org. Now we continue with our guest, Jacep Turk, Republican candidate for U.S. Congress in the 5th Congressional District of Missouri. We would love to hear your questions. So would Jacep Turk. Give us a call here in studio, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. If you have questions or comments for our guest, Jacep Turk, running for U.S. Congress.
Well, I was going to say one thing that very impressed by KKFI that they're having candidates like me on where people can hear a perspective that maybe they don't usually hear. And if you'll notice that the other media so far, now we have one television interview coming up, hasn't taken that on. So I very much appreciate our community radio station willing to have candidates on so people can hear who's running for their vote.
Absolutely. Right.
One question that is plaguing our nation right now is crime. Mm-hmm. And in a recently released report, Springfield was number 11 out of the top 25 most dangerous cities. They had 10 murders in 2015. Poverty was 26.4%. Unemployment at 4.3%. Kansas City was number 10. We had, for every 100,000 residents, we had 1,417.3 violent crimes, 109 murders last year, a poverty rate of 19.4%, an unemployment rate of 5.5%. Number one was St. Louis. Violent crimes per 1,000 is 1,817.1. 2015 had 188 murders, poverty rate of 27.8%, an unemployment rate of 6.1%. And then if you begin to look at it population-wise, Kansas City has the most population at 459,000. St. Louis comes in number two at 319,000. And Springfield comes in number three at 159,000. When we look at and see that the top three cities in the state of Missouri are on the most violent list, what does that tell you about the state of crime in Missouri and where we're looking, what we need to do to look at possibly changing those upward trajectory numbers?
It hurts my heart. In running for this office, I've heard of and known of far too many homicides. 1-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 18-year-olds. And it's a problem that we struggle with across the United States, so it's not just a Missouri problem. And the people that are the cities that rise and fall, that changes over time. I don't have the magic answer to addressing those. That's why I'm out in the community talking to, like I was at the Ride for Peace today, and asking people their opinions on, well, how do we reduce the homicides? How do we reduce the violent crimes? Because I think that's what it's going to take, is the wisdom of people to come up with the solutions. I will tell you that one of the things I'll do as the congressman is make that a focus. That's something that I work on a day-in and day-out basis, because I think it has to have focus if it's going to be solved. And talked to a police officer yesterday, asked his opinion. He had an idea of what could be done. And I'm spending time doing that because it is a burden on my heart to see those kind of statistics and realize that they haven't been solved, and obviously a lot of people are working on them. It will be a focus of mine to reach out in the community and to put forth the solutions in the community, not only in D.C., because it's hard to get things done in D.C., but I will be a hands-on congressman in the 6 months out of the year that Congress is out of session, to be in all the communities of the 5th District to help people solve problems, not only with their federal government, but this specific problem of violence in our communities, and work with the different agencies, the different shareholders within the community to start addressing this problem on a consistent and constant basis, because I think it's going to take a focus of all elected officials, all community members, to finally start reducing the violent crime rate in our cities.
We do have a call holding, Joe.
Okay.
Hang on, caller.
As you look at what the Missouri legislature just did in making Missouri the first state since the Trayvon Martin killings to have an open carry, and so now effective January 1st, you don't need a permit to carry a concealed weapon, and there is no background checks. Do you see that? We understand the Second Amendment rights, but do you think that we need a national gun registration, or we need to do something more to look at that? Because now we've got the three most violent cities in our three largest cities on the top 25, and we've just passed the most liberal gun law that's ever been passed in this nation. Do you favor regulation or national legislation, or what would you do?
Well, I think we have to look at it in terms of that law, and as you said, it goes into effect
January 1st.
All these homicides have happened before that law was even passed. Homicides are continuing before that law goes into effect. We don't know what effect that law is going to have. It may make things worse. It may make things better. We don't know. We do know it is the law right now. However, all these things happened before that's gone into effect, and any of the homicides that happened between now and January 1st is before that goes into effect. So as I said to a group yesterday, we need to figure out what the issue is now. We need to figure out how we can start affecting that violence. And then no matter what happens with this law, we have to continue those type of solutions. It may be a program, it may be something else. I think a lot of it just comes down to relationship and to forming those relationships within the community and deterring people from turning to violence. But it's a huge issue, and so before that even goes to effect, we already have a huge issue. What that does to it, I don't know.
All righty. Carl, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
You are on the air at 90.1 FM. Please tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from.
Yes, my name is Mrs. Phillips, and I'm calling from Grandview, Missouri.
And your question or comment for our guest, Jacob Turk.
Yes. My question for Mr. Turk is, I followed Bernie Sanders' campaign very closely, and one thing I agreed with him on is his view on universal health care and the Affordable Care Act kind of like is, you know, working in that same vein. What are the Republicans in Congress doing to offer universal health care to all the citizens? Because I haven't heard anything from the Republican side as to what they would have planned for universal health care. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for your question, Mrs. Phillips.
Thank you, Mrs. Phillips. It's an excellent question. As far as the Republican Congress, I'm focusing on the solutions that I think will work. I don't know that my answer earlier, just in short form, was to make sure that we cover people who need help with premiums or who may need 100% help with premiums, that they get those. So for me, that's how we get to 100% universal coverage. We had a system that about 80% of people were very happy with before. But we had 20% of the people that needed help in some way or another. Either they couldn't get health insurance or it was far too expensive. And that's the segment of the population that I want to focus on. I'm very worried that the ACA has pulled so much money out of Medicare. I'm very, very worried that it's there's going to be a huge tax on what they call the Cadillac plans, which affects union workers. I just think that we need to really look at the ACA, take the good parts of it, roll it into a different piece of legislation, and then address the problems that we have with it that are leading to escalating premiums and escalating deductions.
Candidate Turk, do you support the Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump? And what is your reaction or response to these tapes that were the videotape and his comments that were misogynistic and very, very disparaging toward women?
Well, I'll answer in this way. I'm not that guy. I have two daughters. I've heard that kind of talk, and when I'm around it, I either tell people that I'm not that guy. I'm not interested in that talk. Just like when some people have brought up race in certain ways, I say I'm not that guy. You need to go support somebody else. So from that aspect of it, I didn't like his comments at all. When it comes to who I support as president or governor or senator or any of those others, I've noticed that it's one of those ways that, you know, can divide people. Am I voting for Trump? Am I voting for Clinton? Am I voting for Johnson? Stein? I'm concentrating on representing the people of the 5th District of Missouri. Congressman Cleaver's been there for 12 years. There's a lot of things that need to be addressed. And no matter who is president, you need a strong congressman to stand up to whoever it is, whether it's Trump, whether it's Clinton. Those would be the two. I don't think Johnson and Stein are going to get in there. But you need somebody who has the interests of the people here and takes that to D.C., and doesn't take D.C. and try to impose it back here. Like I said, I'm an independent-minded Republican. I have a heart and to serve people, a servant's heart. And so that's what I'm concentrating on in this race. Whoever the president turns out to be, we need a voice of people in those halls of Congress that takes our voice to them rather than their voice to us.
So the Republican Party has no responsibility to, I guess, comment on or create a national set of principles or standards that the Republican Party stands for? You never feel responsible for renouncing anything that has been reprehensible?
I'm not part of the political class. I don't respond on for when a Democrat makes comments that are bad. I don't respond when a Republican makes a comment bad. I just look that there we have a political class of entrenched politicians where the powerful take care of each other, and I want it to be different. I want this to be a government for and by the people. And so that's what I concentrate on. It's easy to get distracted with these other issues. What I can do is I can be a man of integrity, and I can show by example how we should do things. You know, I'm a Marine veteran. I know all the words. I don't use them because that's not my place. My place is to give an example of integrity in politics, to represent people, and to fight against the special interests.
Joe?
You talk about the incumbent.
Sorry, Joe. I'll turn your mic on now.
You talk about the incumbent having been in office for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And reading some information on your website, you say you favor term limits. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this. So if you were elected come November, would you favor term limits? What kind of limits would you look at wanting to stay? Because I know about 10 years ago, we established term limits in Missouri House and Missouri Senate. So you wouldn't be a career politician is what you're saying. How long would you serve?
I've thought about that question. And for me, it's either going to be 6 or 12. In terms of term limits overall and pushing for those, because they've got to be constitutional and it's got to be the same between the Senate and the House. As for myself, I could see serving sometime between 6 and 12 years. I'm 60 years old right now. I have really heart to help people. But it's not my ambition to be in political office for the rest of my life. I think Congressman Cleaver's 73 now. I can't see that I would be in there past being 72, 70, 68. It's not my interest. One of the things I will say about the term limits in Missouri, which I'm very, very glad that we have them, part of our problem was, is the, and it was a Republican legislation that did this, is they took off the money cap. One of the very, and it has shown that the term limits with no money caps has really skewed our system. We need to have caps on money in the federal election. It's $2,700 per individual. I don't take any special interest money, but special interest can spend $5,000 or $10,000 on an election. I don't take any of that money, but we need that in Missouri to fix this system. So if you guys are troubled, your listeners are troubled by what happens in Jeff City, I would push for caps.
So in your 6 to 12, that would limit you. That would limit anyone to be able to serve six terms in the House, no, and then 2 terms in the Senate, because the Senate is 6
right,
years.
Right, either that or 3 or 1. Okay. So either 6 or 2 or 3 or 1.
Okay. We're about out of time. Thank you so much for being our guest here today, candidate for U.S. House of Representatives, 5th Congressional District of Missouri, Jacob Turk. Joe, what? Go ahead.
A quick community minute.
All right.
Voting, you can still register to vote until October the 12th,
yep,
which is this coming week.
Yep.
And absentee voting has started. It's 8 to 5. So if you're going to be away from your polling place, you're going to be out of town, mm-hmm, you're going to be working the election, you can go ahead and begin to vote. And I'd also like to say happy 75th birthday to former 3rd District City Councilwoman and former State Representative Melba Curls, who's celebrating, mm-hmm, her birthday today at the Uptown Theater.
Oh, wow.
So have a good That's day good. For your birthday.
And everybody get out to vote.
All righty. Thank you so much. Jacob Turk, he's running for U.S. Congress in the state of Missouri, 5th District. Thanks for being our guest and being
It was my privilege. Thank you.
Candid with us here today. Please stay tuned, everybody, at the top of the hour for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson.